It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. In the summer of 2001, the FBI captured a former Air Force intelligence analyst and defense contractor employee, Brian Patrick Regan, just before he boarded a flight to Europe where he planned to sell secrets to Libya, Iraq, and China. Regan's espionage, the largest theft of government secrets before Edward Snowden's data breach, revealed the holes in security that allowed the former Air Force sergeant to literally walk out of the National Reconnaissance Office with secrets. The story of this data breach, which foreshadowed the compromises made by Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning, is told in the book The Spy Who Couldn't Spell by Science Magazine journalist Udijit Bhattacharjee. And we welcome Udijit Bhattacharjee to the show. Udijit, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Well, first off, what was Brian Patrick Regan trying to sell?
Brian Regan was trying to sell thousands of pages of classified documents, most of which were in the form of secret satellite imagery. There are photographs and signals intelligence relating to military assets of other countries as well as our own all around the world.
One of the things that seems to be the case from your reporting and in your book is that Regan initiated this plan on his own. He was not recruited by any foreign government. What motivated him?
That's correct. So Brian Regan was in severe debt. He had a lot of credit card debt to the tune of $130,000, which doesn't sound like a huge amount, but at least for him at the time, in the late 90s, seemed very substantial. And so his primary motivation was to sell secrets in order to relieve himself of this debt and to secure his children's financial future. He was about to retire from the Air Force, and he was worried that he wouldn't have a source of income after that, and that's what led him to plot. But there was a deeper psychological reason for why he did what he did. All his life, he had suffered a lot of humiliation and ridicule in his childhood because of his dyslexia, and later on because of his odd personality and his social awkwardness. And so he did have this deep desire to validate himself, to show the world and himself that he was smart. So he thought that he would have the last laugh.
Well, he did outsmart the people at the National Reconnaissance Office when it came to beating what levels of security they had to keep these documents secure. How did he steal the large cache of documents that he managed to hoard?
That's a great question, Steve. Brian Regan had access to IntelLink, like thousands of other employees in the intelligence community. IntelLink is basically the intelligence community's internet, which is totally secret and hidden from the public. Brian Regan was able to access thousands of reports and images off of government servers in the same way that Snowden and Manning would be able to years later. Brian Regan printed these documents out systematically and started hoarding them, first in his office, and then later on he was able to smuggle these documents out inside of his gym bag, and he'd just walk out of the building with stacks of papers, and he stored them in his basement. Later he moved it to a storage facility, and then finally he buried these documents in two state parks outside of D.C.
So when he was at the time, we should point out that maybe unlike Manning or Snowden, this was a little bit earlier. This was before 2001, and printing out the documents seemed to be, I guess, the best way to move them out as opposed to putting them on some sort of flash drive or something. But it's amazing
to
me
that you're exactly right.
I mean, he's acquiring or did acquire lots and lots of material. And at times, he's printing out these documents, which have nothing to do with his work at the time at the National Reconnaissance Office. And he's just kind of hoarding them around the office. This is kind of an amazing thing where he's filling them up in empty file cabinets.
It was really shocking when the National Reconnaissance Office finally figured out what he had done. There were people there whose jaws just dropped when they determined how long this had been going on for. There's a little story I tell in the book about Reagan printing out these documents and then storing them in a credenza in his office when he was away on travel, you know, while he was still in the middle of sort of committing espionage. The office managers at the NRO came and were taking away excess furniture, and they removed this credenza because they thought nobody was using it. And then somebody in that division opened it up and saw this stack of papers, and they said, oh, this probably belongs to somebody. And so when Reagan got back from his travels, they called him and said, hey, we found something in this credenza. Is this yours? And he said, yes. And he couldn't believe his luck when they just sent it back to him, and he went back to hoarding more documents.
We're talking with Yudhijit Bhattacharjee. He is the author of The Spy Who Couldn't Spell, which is the story of Brian Reagan, a former Air Force intelligence analyst who was convicted of espionage in 2001. So, Yudhijit, how did the FBI get wind that something was up?
So back in December of 2000, the FBI was sent a package of materials from an informant that was tied or connected to the Libyan consulate in New York. This package consisted of an anonymous letter that had been written by somebody inside the intelligence community offering hundreds of pages of secrets to Muammar Gaddafi and his intelligence service for a price of $13 million. Inside this package were a bunch of classified documents and sensitive documents, maybe about 20 or 22 pages, which was supposed to just be a sample of the kinds of secrets that the sender of this letter would be able to furnish if this deal went through. So once the FBI got this letter, they began a hunt for whoever had sent it, and ultimately they zeroed in on Brian Reagan.
Well, as you mentioned, Reagan suffered from dyslexia, and that leads to the title of your book, The Spy Who Couldn't Spell. Did this letter that they acquired, that they received from the informant, have a number of spelling errors? Was this the first tip-off that there was a connection between this letter and Reagan?
Indeed, although it was a little more complicated than that. The letter was filled with spelling errors. The letter was actually written in code, and there were three parts to the letter. There was the coded letter itself. Then there was a sheet with code words in it explained. And then there was another sheet or a few sheets with instructions for how to decrypt the letter. And in fact, Reagan had sent this letter out in these three parts separately. So there were three different packages that had been sent out. And so what was funny about this package was that even though there was clearly meticulous planning behind the communication, the words themselves in the code sheet, several of those words were horribly misspelled. And so that was a clue that whoever had sent the package perhaps was dyslexic. But it took a lot of sleuthing to eventually sort of connect the dots and trace the sender of the letter, who was Brian Reagan. So in short, the dyslexia angle proved to be one of the clues that the FBI used and ultimately proved to be a critical piece of the evidence that confirmed the suspicion that Brian Reagan indeed was the traitor.
Reagan was very cautious and he was worried about being caught. And at some points, his paranoia kind of tipped off the FBI when they were surveilling him. What were some of the lengths that he went to in an attempt to avoid surveillance?
Brian Reagan did some extraordinary things in trying to make sure that he was not being followed. There's one scene in the book where he drives out from the NRO in Chantilly and drives all the way into a state park with a couple of Mad magazines. And he goes into the forest, parks on the side of the street inside the park, and then leaves the magazines under a tree and then returns a few hours later to pick up the magazines. This was his way of sort of finding out if anybody was following him or if anybody might pick up the magazines that he had left behind. There was something else that he did when he was traveling on the subway. He would suddenly jump off the train at the last minute to see if he was being followed, because presumably he thought that if there were any surveilling agents following him, then they would step off the train too, so as to not lose him. Of course, the FBI was hip to what he was doing, that he was employing counter-surveillance techniques, and so they did their best too to keep him in the dark about following him. You know, right till the very end, he felt that he was not being followed, when in fact he was.
They decided to pull the trigger on arresting him really right before he intended to go out and sell these secrets, or attempt to contact somebody to sell these secrets. When did they take him in?
They arrested him in August of 2001. This was almost 8 months after they had intercepted the package that he had sent to the Libyan consulate. Reagan was about to leave the country. He had been trying for months to find a buyer for all the secrets that he had, and he hadn't succeeded, so he was making a second trip to Europe. His plan was to walk into embassies of Iraq and Libya and try and sort of market himself as a spy. But before he could board the train, the FBI arrested him.
And despite the fact that he was captured, he really did seem to outsmart the FBI, or at least the security offices, because the code that he created and the places where he hid some of these secrets, they couldn't figure it out.
That's right, Steve. And so that's what's most unusual about this case. Usually in most espionage cases, after the spy is arrested, the case is pretty much over. But in this case, the FBI had enough evidence to be sure that Brian Regan was the person who had sent these anonymous letters to the Libyan consulate, but they didn't know what he had done precisely. It took them a long time to figure out that he had been printing out documents and that he might have hidden them somewhere. When Brian Regan was arrested, he just had sheets of paper with him with seemingly random letters and numbers on them. And Brian Regan wasn't about to tell the FBI what they meant, when in fact they were his way of encrypting the coordinates of all the hiding locations where he had hidden the documents. So to make a long story short, you know, you would have expected that Brian Regan would start cooperating with the government after being arrested. But in fact, he thought that his plan was so foolproof that the government would never be able to find what he had stolen. And so he, in fact, tried to use that to blackmail the government. He wanted a short prison sentence, and he said that he would only cooperate if he got a short sentence, and that otherwise the government was free to try to uncover what he had done on its own.
He didn't get the short sentence, though. To make the story even shorter, he did end up getting life in prison.
No, his gamble did not pay off. Like everything else in life, Brian Regan had clearly done what you might say a bit of overthinking when he had plotted this out. And so he ended up getting a life sentence, even though the espionage he committed didn't really end up damaging national security, in the sense that those secrets never got to a foreign intelligence. And yet, the government sought the death penalty at one point in the prosecution phase, which was highly unusual, because even people like Robert Hansen have not been targeted for the death penalty. Brian Regan didn't get the death penalty, of course, but he's serving the rest of his life in prison.
Yudhijit Bhattacharjee writes about this story in his book, The Spy Who Couldn't Spell, and he's been joining us this morning. Yudhijit, thanks so much for being with us today.
Excellent. Thanks.
It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.